Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Okay, we'll keep moving because I'm delighted now to welcome back to the show comedian, actor, storyteller and of course chat show host Tommy Tiernan. How are you, Tommy?
Brendan, exciting to hear your voice.
And I'm excited to hear yours. Like, you sound excited, I can tell.
Really?
Yeah.
You have a kind of a... there's a lively edge to your voice that I'm... I don't know if I can trust, but I'm totally thrilled to hear it.
Tommy, you can always trust me. You know that.
There's people all around the country listening to someone in a Cork accent say, you can always trust me. And they're just not feeling right, Brendan.
No. Tommy, I want you to succeed... I want you to succeed for you and for me, and everyone listening wants this to work so we can do this. So that time of year again, the Tommy Tiernan Show is coming back in January, season 10.
Yeah.
Season 10. Did you enjoy filming this run?
I wasn't as nervous as I have been for previous ones. I really enjoyed the last couple of seasons of your one, Brendan, way back. I thought it was, you were... coming into yourself or something. It was really, really good, you know. So I don't know if I'm developing or not, but I know I'm not as nervous. I used to get anxious days before each recording.
Yeah.
But now it's only hours, so I guess it's an improvement.
Yeah.
But we'll keep galloping. We'll keep galloping, I think. There's two ways of doing it. You keep going until they ask you to stop, or you decide yourself to get off the horse. So one of those two things will happen. I don't know which yet.
Okay, but it sounds like you're not thinking about it soon anyway.
No.
So, come here. Interesting now. When you started getting nervous days beforehand compared to when you just get nervous a few hours beforehand.
Yeah.
Are you better with having put in the work of being nervous for days? Or are you better if you don't put in the work and you don't bother freaking yourself out?
It's a futile nervousness. It has no positive benefits. You're just abdominally scrunched for days. No, there's no use to it. It serves no purpose. But you're also probably
not in charge
of it.
It's a kind of Catholic masochism, like that. You think I need to put in the pain and the work in order for this to be good.
Is that where they got the word mass from? M-A-S-S-O-C-H-I-S-M. No, we were never in our house in 51 Troytown Heights in Navan. The church never had much of a presence, to be honest with you. We were more in tune with Hilda Ogden than we were with Mother Teresa. Do you know what I mean? It was Coronation Street in our house now rather than the catechism.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be a Catholic twist I have on self-loathing. It would be a self-generated genetically.
Okay, just Irish then.
Just Irish, yeah.
Tommy, there have been lots of kind of magical moments on the show over the years. And I know this is a very hard question now, but just off the top of your head, what stands out for you?
Brenda Fricker.
Yeah.
She's the one. And my imagination goes there straight away when people ask me that question. It's because the interview was so two-sided. Brenda came on and she was asked to do one thing in terms of her clothes. And they said, Brenda, whatever you wear, don't wear black. So she comes on head to toe dressed in black. And she sits there and she had this kind of fierce, determined, unapologetic stare. And it was like what I was kind of reading from it, whether it was what was intended or not, was I'm not going to pretend to be happy just for the sake of this television show. And if you're not able to handle my sadness, then that's your responsibility, not mine. So we talked like that for about 20 minutes. And then the interview, she just turned. She just all of a sudden became this lively, bright-eyed storyteller. And she told an amazing story about Joe Pesci and Al Pacino at the Oscars. And it was because the interview had those two sides of her, that's what made it memorable in for me, is that it was dynamically brilliant in two completely different ways. So that one, so Brenda Fricker.
Yeah, good. you can't tell me anything about the season you've just recorded, but...
Well, I haven't recorded many of them now.
Oh,
so
have you not? Okay. No. Okay, so you're doing it as you go. Okay, I misunderstood that.
More or less, as we'll have a few in the bag so we can start off in January at a trot, you know, rather than...
Okay.
You know, so we've three done. And, yeah, I mean, the jeopardy hasn't changed. The situation hasn't changed. It's still somebody unknown coming out.
Yeah.
And talking. And it's a strange gift to have in the sense of a strange way of making your way in the world through talking and words. And it's not practical. You don't leave anything behind you. You know, I yap for a living. And it's as transient as fog, like, you know, so...
Yeah.
But that's what I do, I talk.
So you're always right there, present, and that's it, then you moved on.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So you were saying about the, it'll finish up or you'll decide to finish up or whatever.
Yeah.
Your aim now, work-wise, you're not pursuing a career as such, though, are you? Is it just kind of, just do interesting things? What's the next interesting thing?
So I think when you're starting off, when I started off doing stand-up, you have this kind of... ego-driven mania. I want to make it as whatever. And that gallops you down the road and you provide for your family and all that, and it's great. And then something happens and you kind of go, that world that I was so obsessed with having status in is actually meaningless to me now. Where's the adventure?
When did that happen?
Yesterday.
I'm so glad that I was here for this moment.
It happened in the Apple Green just beyond the Enfield toll booth. Adventure. Where's sometimes people starting off in stand up ask me, oh, would you have any advice and stuff like that? And it's the only advice that I would ever give to anybody entering a job in comedy is follow the fun. So I'm kind of trying to take my own advice, really. Follow the fun. And whatever happens, the likelihood that you might enjoy it is increased if that's your mantra. Follow the fun. So we'll see where that takes me. But no, I'm a career thing now. I'm mercifully the far side of that. You know. But you wouldn't know what notions would come into your head the next time you pull into the Apple Green, the far side of the toll booth in Enfield.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But for now, it's... it's about adventure.
You didn't bother with Liveline or the presidency in the end, not this time, no?
Brendan, I wasn't asked. I had the phone charged and beside me at all times and not one. Now, I don't know who to phone me in terms of the presidency. I don't know.
The deep state.
Michael might have just given me a call himself and said, listen, look, the key is under the mat. But, or the key is under the dog. But there's that part of the adventure. There's the adventure which is self-generated, which is I want to do X, Y and Z. And then there's the adventure of what people say, would you be interested in? So there isn't a fierce amount of the second one at the moment, but we'll see. I hope.
Yeah, well, people probably think your dance card is fairly full. So the podcast is back. You've been recording them in front of live audiences. And then the last time we spoke, you were about to embark on a storytelling tour the last time we spoke. You're now doing a regular storytelling show in Galway. Tell us a bit about that.
So I spend the week kind of thinking. And it's not good for me. A certain amount of it is fine, but I need to be thrown around by an audience once a week in order to get balanced. So I do a lunchtime storytelling show in the King's Head Bar just off Shop Street in Galway every Thursday. And it's a different show every week. Different stories, folk tales or autobiographical ones or kind of notions. And that just keeps me ticking over, you know, like a motorbike that you have to start every couple of days just to make sure it doesn't go flat. So that's what I do and I love it. And I record the shows and I edit them down to about like a half hour. And then I put them out on this thing called Substack, which is a kind of, it's kind of like Twitter for smart bastards.
You're doing a musical as well now?
Yes, with a fantastic monster man, Mick Flannery. Is there anybody like him? Do you know, bizarrely gifted singer. His voice has these elements to it that are very affecting. His lyricism is genius and particular, and the song arrangements are kind of, they're very, it moves like waves in the ocean. Like, it's very, very, there's nobody like him. I'm astounded at him. And he wrote a musical called, years ago, he wrote an album called Evening Train. And then he wanted to turn it into a musical, and he called it The House Must Win. And it's about poker players in a little village in the wilds of West Cork. Serious poker players, no messing, like blood on the line. And the idea of doing a bit of acting and the idea of performing something with mixed music was too good to turn down. So I think we start performing that in April.
And where are you at with the singing?
Don't undermine me now. How am I?
What's the trick with singing? What have you learned about singing?
What have I learned?
What's the trick with it? Yeah.
The trick is to be told that you can do it. That's the trick. Ever since primary school, I have been told to mime. I remember in sixth class in St. Oliver Plunkett's National School in Navan, we were singing for Mass, and Mr. Doyle turned to me and says, "Tommy Tiernan, you just make movements with your mouth. No noise, please." And that just, I guess, affected me for years and years and years. So when you...
He silenced you, Tommy.
I think so. I think it's... he silenced me. That I'm getting emotional now. I will not be silenced.
You were not heard.
No. So been told that I wasn't able to sing kind of made me not able to sing. And then recently someone says, "No, you have a fairly limited range in fairness now, Tommy, but I can get notes out of you." So I'm that's how I'm ploughing on with that.
How are you fixed for Christmas? Do you like Christmas?
Not really.
Why not?
I don't know. I'm not sure we're doing it right. I don't know what we need to do to kind of just unlock it. There's definitely fun to be had, isn't there? There's something, like, all the ingredients are there, but the approach is just... the approach is just a bit off key at the minute, you know, and I can't figure out what it is that would unleash all the goodness. Does it seem a bit pressurised? Does it seem a bit all about the children? Does it seem a bit glitzy and economic? And I'm not sure, but I would. There's a bit of fiddling to be done with Christmas yet before we nail it.
But
I think
you can design your own. Do you have your own Christmas rituals or anything?
Myself and my wife like to make love at midnight on Christmas Eve.
That's nice.
Thank you. Oh, Brendan, that was the weirdest sounding thing I've ever heard in my life. That sounded like you were kind of hiding in the corner of the room while it was happening and just couldn't help yourself. That's nice.
You heard the little voice afterwards.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of. That's the only ritual, really.
Do you relax a bit at Christmas? Because I know you've trouble relaxing.
Do I relax? No, I don't.
I don't mean to put pressure on you, to relax at Christmas.
And I just think it is pressurised, and I don't know how we... People spend a lot of time worrying about getting Christmas right. And I think that obviously has to be done. That's part of the prep. But it seems to me that it's a bit... Not that it's performative, but there are... maybe it's a bit too tightly wound around its own perfection or something. I don't know. It just needs a loosening. That's
will
all.
You have Christmas in the family Christmas in your house? Like, will you have a big crowd in and that?
We had a few years ago. Or was it last year? We had about 87 Tiernans from all over the country come down.
No way.
And it was magnificent. There was four generations of Tiernan in the house. We had a bar, and there was drinking and stories and a kind of a gathering that you would normally expect at a funeral, yeah. but this time, and that was magnificent. And the older generation especially were so grateful. Thank you. Thank you so much for getting us all together. Thank you. And there's the older generation, there's five of them in my father's family, and they were just my Auntie Maura, my Auntie Emer, my Uncle Brian, my father Kevin, and my Uncle John, and they were just so happy to be with the tribe and for no one to be wearing the wooden suit. Do you know? And it was... So that was really lovely. Yeah,
okay, so there's an unlocking of Christmas, potentially, a selling point, like a funeral without a coffin. That's what it could be.
A funeral without a coffin. You haven't phrased that right, Brendan, but
no,
I know what
no,
you mean.
You'll do better. You're a man of words. You work on it there. I'm just showing you a rough sketch.
Yeah. You cross them in. You cross them over. I'll head them in.
So that was lovely, actually. So that type of thing makes it worthwhile, you know.
Yeah. Your dad is still alive, isn't he?
And in mighty form.
Do you get on mighty. Well with him? Yeah.
I get on better with him now than I was when we were both younger. I think I was probably. I don't think he could place me in terms of he couldn't get a hold of my temperament or inclinations or my wiring. And I think, and he named me after his father, who he loved very much and who he lost when he was 19. And I just, I think I was too queer for him to be... To heal him or to calm him or to make him feel comfortable. But now that we've both given up on ourselves and each other, it's a lot.
I was going to ask who came around. Everyone came around, didn't they?
If I ended up being the same type of 84-year-old as my father, God willing, that would be the blessing of all blessings. If I can be the type of father that my father has turned into, I'd be very, very happy with that, Brendan.
What kind of father is that?
He's easygoing. He's a great storyteller. He's very social. He's always in good form. He is fond of his pints. Will drink maybe once or twice a week down in the Old Bridge Inn in Navan. And he has great friends. And he's gifted socially. And he has a great heart and great wisdom. And there's a softness to him. There's an easiness to him, you know, that, like, I'm composed of my mother and my father. And so my mother had a wild strap in her. Like, she comes from the dark lands of Tipperary. There's parts of Tipperary that are shadowed the whole time. That's where she's from. And so she gave me other gifts of kind of defiance and independence and wildness and a self-destruction that, if harnessed properly, can be anarchic and creative, but it can also destroy you if you don't get it right.
Yeah.
And so I have the mixture of those two people. Maybe, and this is just storytelling as well, these are just imaginings, I don't know biologically if they're true, but from an imaginative sense, I have the two of them in me. I'm composed of the two of them. But my father is the one that I think is the easier resting place, and it would be a great benefit to me and to people who know me if I wound up like him.
And are you going that way?
I don't know. You'd have to ask. I don't know. I think I'm still a bit wound up.
Yeah.
But if I was too relaxed, I probably wouldn't be able to do this for a living.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You need a bit of salt and vinegar in you. I think.
Salt and vinegar, I like it. Come here, I meant to ask you this before. Your father was in Forest Taluntas, was he?
No, he was in Chagas.
Chagas, which was Forest Taluntas.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah, so was my father. But it's funny about those men at that time. Now, my dad would be a little bit older than yours.
Yeah.
They're the men who built Ireland as a food island and everything.
Do you reckon?
They were the guys who did it, yeah. They were like those old-fashioned kind of... you know when civil servants were kind of... young and go get them and were building big things and everything. Those guys built, you know, Kerrygold,
My father would refuse that accolade.
Would he, yeah?
When my father retired, there was a big do from him in some restaurant in Meath that served pigeon. I can't remember the name of it, but I know for a fact there was pigeon on the menu.
Right.
But anyway, the boss men from Chagask in Dublin came down, and the new recruits from Chagask around County Meath were there, and farmers turned up in their dozens to say thank you to my father for all the advice. And this would have been back in the days where grants were just getting going, you know. And so you'd have farmers who would have difficulty in filling out forms because, you know, they wouldn't have done a fierce amount in school, and all their wisdom was in their eyes and their hands and with soils and with animals. And filling out forms was a piano playing that they had no kind of ability for. So they would often be phoning my father at all hours of the night, and he would call out to them and, you know, help them through things as well as all the other aspects of the job. So all these people got up to speak and to say, Kevin Tiernan, thank you very much for the 30 or 40 years work around the farms of County Meath. And I was moved to see this happening. And then my father got up to give a speech at the end, and humble and mischievous, he said, the praise is grand, thanks, but know this, my favourite part of my job was standing shoulder to shoulder with the farmer of a Tuesday morning and pissing into hedges. So my father did, if you said to my father, that's what built the state, I'm not sure. You know, so that's my dad. That's the shape of him, like.
Yeah, that's good. Because, you know, the way there's a sense right now that men, or the idea of being a man, is in some kind of crisis. Like, it sounds like your father did teach you how to be a man, didn't he?
God, I don't know. All I'd say is that he'd be inspiring.
Yeah.
And maybe you teach indirectly through your presence and behaviour.
That's how you do it, I think, isn't it? You model it and they see it. Yeah.
And you don't get everything right. And I remember I was about 17 and I was full of the wind of myself. Like, I was just inflamed with my own possibilities.
Mm.
And I went up to my father with the cheek of this, like, and I said, and I didn't say it meanly, it was a statement of fact. And I said, Dad, I don't need you anymore. Okay, now that's quite a declaration.
Mm-hmm.
Years later, we were drinking, 15 years later, and he reminded me of that moment. And he said, as he lifted a beautiful pint of porter up to his lips, he says, Tom, that was the nicest thing anybody's ever said to me. So that's my dad, like.
And how do you think you've kind of taught your boys about being a man or whatever?
I don't know. I have no idea. It's a teaching that you don't give deliberately, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's a teaching that depends on sentences, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So what do they see when they look at you? You know what I mean? What are they picking up there? And I don't know. What can you hope for? That they, you know, that they're not too scarred by it. It's very hard. That's an impossible question to answer, Brendan, really. I wouldn't know what type of a father I am, other than I do think about it a lot, and I do worry about my parenting, and I ask the best of myself when it comes to being a parent, and I don't think that I live up to that very often. But that's harsh enough, like, and I don't know if my kids would echo that. I'd bait them if they did. But bait them with a stick, you ungrateful pup!
Your grandfather now too.
Prinks! Have you got this in your house yet, Brendan?
What?
The teenager's going prinks. Some of the friends are coming around for prinks.
I'll
slap the head off you, prinks! He died years ago. Anyway,
What kind of grandfather are you?
Oh, that's a bit easier, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just fill them full of sugar, send them home.
But a lot that's of people, all. I'm seeing it now, in my own age group, a lot of people seem to kind of feel a new, different kind of love with grandchildren, do you think?
A different kind of love?
Yeah.
Ah, no, I don't think so. I mean, is there the privilege of holding, like, a baby or a 2 or 3 year old toddler in your arms, like, and their little hands touching your face, and just the weight of them in the crook of your arm. That's, I mean, God, I
you mean your own? Not
I know
the
anybody's yeah. anybody's yeah. children, really. I was in a cafe one time in Adair, and this is one of the benefits about being known by most people and to be liked by a good percentage of them. One of the benefits is stuff like this. I was in this cafe in Adair, and there was a woman there with, I'd say, a 9 or 10 month old baby, and I said to her, "Give us a go." And she handed me her baby, and I held her baby, and I, you know, rubbed its little face and all that. And yeah. afterwards, I was just thinking to myself, God, isn't it, for all the drawbacks of being known,
yeah,
isn't that magnificent that she yeah. just say to a stranger, like, "Give us a go of your baby"?
Because she knew you.
And she handed the baby over. Like, that's, so it's, yeah. That thing of feeling a different kind of love for your grandchildren, I don't have that sense. I think that all babies, Jesus, to hold them for a minute is, you know, something in your system just celebrates. And there are few things as physically beautiful as that. Like, that's one of the pleasures of life, isn't it? It's gorgeous.
Yeah, I think maybe I'll come back around to it. You know, I'm still kind of not long out of, I'm long enough out of it. Do you know what I mean? Do you know the way you come back around to babies? Like, you get turned against them slightly at one stage when they're running your life.
Listen, will you hate them? That's the truth. But you hate them.
Will you go to mass and that over Christmas?
No, I won't. I recently made a formal commitment to Buddhism. So I'll do that on Christmas Day.
So it's formal?
Well, I made a formal commitment. So do you know the way people get interested in different things and they're kind of, oh, I like a little bit of this and I like yeah. a little bit of that. And I've been kind of flirting around with great aspects of Christianity and great aspects of Hinduism and Buddhism over the past, oh God, I don't know, 30 years maybe. And I found the one that is of most use to me is Zen Buddhism. And I just thought, okay, now you can flute around, Tommy, for the rest of your life. You're 56 years
tourism,
of age.
Tourism, Tony Bates calls it. He says, try a bit of Buddhism tourism for a while. Yeah. And yeah, so you're gone beyond that now into a different stage, yeah?
Well, you just make a formal commitment. You sign up and you go, okay, I am going to do this with this group, with this structure, with these disciplines, with this team. And I'm like 56, it's time to get serious, you know. And
so what kind of level of commitment are we talking about here?
Daily. And you'd have a commitment to the... What's the word? Buddhism tends to crumble every time you try and talk about it, which is one of its graces. The commitment is to the way. That's vague, I know, but that's what it is. You're making a commitment to a way. You're on the road to where you are. And I know these things. It's you can descend into cliche very quickly, meaningless opposites. But I just decided that I would take it seriously. So I would probably, I won't go to mass, but I'll probably, I will, they call it sitting as opposed to meditating, Zazen. I will sit Zazen on Christmas Day.
And again, I know the way that you can describe to me is not the true way, but is it working for you? Yeah.
There are,
and again, that's putting a sledgehammer on it. Yeah.
There are great. There are. I think the reason why I chose it is because I can sense the benefits of it. And one of the main thing about it for me, I suppose, was the benefit of developing the ability that you can't always use, but it's there whenever you can get it, and even though it's only in its infancy with me, is to let go of thoughts. So you might get a full flush of feeling and getting wound up in your own head and trying to think your way out of it and trying to find the solution in language. And one of the great gifts of Zazen is the habit of letting go. Just let go of the thoughts, let go of it.
And then you go, I've let go,
and then you're back. Thinking again. Yeah. But it's that okay. Repetitive thing.
So are you getting little flashes, are you, of it? Is that how it works?
Have you even noticed how my voice has changed since we started talking about this, Brendan? I'm very wise now.
Yeah.
Have you noticed my voice has dropped?
I have.
The Egypt in me has gone. Always back.
There you go. We had it for a second.
That'll be the limit of my enlightenment.
Tommy, it's always an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for that. And tickets for The House Must Win, the musical, which will be in the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary in April, and then a run in the Everyman in Cork in May, are on sale now. And The Tommy Tiernan Show is back on RT1 on Saturday nights at 9:35 from January the 3rd. Tommy Tiernan, thank you so much, and happy Christmas, if that's not an inappropriate thing to say to a Buddhist like you.
God bless.
See you, Tommy. Tommy, thanks a million.
Brendan, thanks for that. Thank you.